Hi, this is Matt Bertuzzi, and you are listening to The Sassholes.
Welcome to Sassholes, a show dedicated to issues in the software as a service industry. We are revenue ops with a... Jamie, Jason, KG, myself, Pete, have a combined 100 years of making interesting decisions. Please subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Today, our guest is Matt Bertuzzi. He's wicked smart. Matt is the Director of Research and Ops for the Bridge Group. Bridge Group has spent the last two decades helping more than 400 B2B companies achieve more prospects, more pipeline, and more revenue. Matt runs the numbers behind the Bridge Group research. He loves SDR, AEAM processes, metrics, and technologies. He also wrote a book for Salesforce nerds called Lightning Sales Ops.
We
just put it right here.
I found one.
There we go. Yeah. Lightning.
Got Ukrainian colors today.
All right. Before we get to Matt, this episode is brought to you by NeuroNoodle. Hey, parents of athletes, get a doodle their noodle, which is a brain map before the season starts, so you have a baseline to compare to. You get a physical every year, right? Well, get a brain checkup now before the next season starts. Schedule an appointment now at neuronoodle.com. It takes only 20 minutes to get the data you need to get the peace of mind. Put your athlete on the field. KG.
You pick on Jamie's back.
Yeah, don't pick on me. No, yes. These jokes. And yes, I Pete. Read the joke. It's so bad.
Yes, Pete. Yes, Pete.
Carney.
Yeah, Pete.
What's brown and sounds like a bell?
I don't know, Pete.
Dung. Leave us some comments on our blog at sassholes.net. Hey, we got any shout-outs?
Yes, that was awful. That was, you could do better.
Yeah, that was bad. That was one
are you,
of say, the
are you saying it was shitty?
Does, it was shitty? Does not meet expectations. Congratulations to Justin Hayden for being promoted to Senior Strategic Account Executive at ZipRecruiter. Congratulations to Tom Christensen, who used to be in marketing at ZipRecruiter, for starting at a new position at Vice President of Marketing at Encore. And congratulations for Clay Cooper, one of my buds. I trusted him a lot at ZipRecruiter. I know, look at Jamie. There it is.
Arnie,
congratulations, Clay Cooper.
That or something.
you're the absolute, these people you're giving a shout out to, you're typing this in right now, they're gonna say, why don't we get our pictures up? Because yeah, Carney's putting it in right now.
7 minutes
I put the other stuff in earlier today.
Let's anyway, congratulations to Clay Cooper. We'll leave it at this for starting as a new position as senior account executive at Crexie. He used to be at ZipRecruiter, one of my favorites. That's it.
Love for me. All right. Gee, Carney, you got anybody?
My shout outs, one is to People AI. We had our RKO, which is the revenue kickoff last week, in person in San Diego. So I got to meet everybody for the first time. It was awesome. If you're not doing in-person meetings, it's life-changing compared to what we've been doing. Zoom calls are kind of rough. April Ray Buenaventura for starting a new position as a senior revenue analyst at Genesis. She's great. I know her sister very well. She was working on my team over at Flexera. Chris Lee, former sales trainer over at CB. He just started a position as national account executive at ZipRecruiter. And then I got to give a shout out to KG. We had dinner last week and it was awesome in LA. We had a great time at, what was the name of the restaurant? Firefly. I highly recommended. We had steak frites and sent a picture to Pete and made him jealous.
Sure.
Turns out Jamie likes Brussels sprouts. He ate the whole
thing. Oh, yeah. I love Brussels sprouts.
Two appetizers of Brussels sprouts and he ate all of them.
I ate one whole appetizer myself.
In Cali, in LA, don't you just eat kale? Anyways, Brian, nice that you guys had a good time together. You guys are cute. All right, Brian Remillard being promoted director of sales at Barcodes. Megan Shine, 6 years at Barcodes. This is a Barcodes week. Matt Gaines, enterprise sales director at MediaFly. Way to go, my friend. Okay. KG, how do you know Matt? How do we get him on the show? This is a wicked smart guy.
But you know what, Matt? Now I want to think it's been over 10 years that I think I've known you. So I learned about the Bridge Group long ago as an inside sales leader. The Bridge Group is I mean, bar none, the marquee go-to-market inside sales, SDR, AE consultancy that's out there. They've helped many of my friends and customers. And Matt, I love what Matt does. Matt works on like the data and the research, and they publish such good stuff. And so Matt and I have developed a longstanding relationship, mainly because the CEO of the Bridge Group kept yelling at me, KG, stop hitting our farms. Just, you know, you look like a lead.
Email.
Yeah. Just you want data, go just email Matt directly. And so I got in trouble. So Matt and I have developed a very close relationship because he has good data, or data, as they say on the East Coast. They say data.
We do. Right. Agenda and data. It's a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and donkeys, right? Donkeys? That's the Dunkin' Donuts. I know I had guys from Boston that would go get coffee, and they would go to Dunkin' Donuts and say, I'd like a large regular, which means sugar and cream.
Of course.
And if they said, do you want sugar and cream with that? They'd say, you're not a Dunkies, and they'd leave.
Hey, Carney. Go a foot away from the mic, please. You're blowing out his fucking ears.
He finally got his.
You're the absolute fucking worst.
I even have the worst microphone or the
worst. Just right. Keep it right there. Keep it right there.
Oh my All right. God. All right. Can we focus on Matt for a second?
Yeah. So Matt, what's your background, man?
Yeah.
You got KG sent us this PDF of a report that's just hot off the presses. I mean, it's not even a real. It's a draft.
You got a great. Pete, you got to put some of that, some of your magic and do like,
oh, yeah, breaking news.
I mean, it's sizzling. Yeah, typos, whatever, but the data is right. Give us your background, and we want to deep dive into this thing head first.
Sure.
Please tell us about yourself, Matt.
So I went to school for international studies. I learned Russian literature, 19th century Russian literature. Was my concentration, which I easily parlayed into. I worked for Marriott for a bunch of years. Then I was an SDR, an AE, a product manager. And then I joined the Bridge Group as a consultant. I was actually carrying a bag, flying around doing consulting work. And then I started doing this data stuff because clients wanted a lot of benchmarking. And it's hard to like mentally organize anecdotes. And it's much easier to do systematic data collection and synthesis. And then that's what this report is. So this report is version 8 of our AE research, which we were just talking about. The 2007 version was maybe a third of the takers were inside. So there was like channel inside and field. And the average ACV for an inside rep in 07 was like 16K. Like that was big doings back then. And then so this, the AE side and the SDR side are every other year for us. So we switch back and forth. So this year, 2022, is the AE side. And what you have on your hands is the pre-release of the SaaS report. So it's focused on 253, I think, SaaS companies, 90% North America, maybe 80% above 5 million in revenue, ACVs all over the place, some, you know, 1, 2, 3,000 a year, some 100, 150,000 plus a year. So what we try to do is figure out what has changed over time, where are we, and what matters for different ACVs? Because a company is a company is a company, but if no matter what, if you're selling 100 grand, 100K ACV, it doesn't matter if you're 5 million or 5 billion. Like that's a very unique market segment, and you care about peer benchmarks in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to set up a team, I mean, you want to justify budget and your numbers and outcomes. I mean, this stuff is golden. Now, I don't want to... We're worried about boring people going through a PowerPoint presentation, but the data just jumps off the page. I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, going through, you know, the slides. We can gloss over some of the stuff, but I mean, it's really, you know, I saw it this morning and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to pick out the slides that I want. And I wound up putting like a dozen in there. I mean,
yeah, right. There's a ton. Well, Pete, why don't you start screen sharing at slide 9?
Here, go ahead.
Yeah. Want me to do it?
Yeah.
No, have Matt do it. His
All right,
stuff.
Matt, you do it. Slide 9. This is marketing contribution by revenue, which while you're pulling that up, Matt, this is a question that I get from my clients again and again and again, which is how much should marketing be generating and contributing to the pipeline or revenue? You know, how much should be AE generated? And, you know, and this is fantastic. The course, Matt, You've done a great job by breaking it down by ACV. So share your screen and let's do it, man.
So yeah, so this is the question, right? It's like, how much should market? So it should be a fair bit is the answer. As companies grow, it is harder. It's harder for Salesforce to source a third of, you know, pipeline than it is for somebody who's a Series A. So at the ACV level is actually where it's really interesting. I think a lot to do with like unit economics, right? Like the cost of customer acquisition with humans at that lowest ACV is very high. So you try to feed them as much as one can. But
that's right.
So if we said of all the companies, roughly a third, 33% would be the median response. So 50% above, 50% below.
Yeah.
And then it falls as revenues rise. It falls as revenues rise and it falls contribution, marketing contribution falls as ACV rises or as annual contract value rises. And we actually do, one thing we do in this report is we look at what we call high growth companies, top quintile. So we segment all revenues and then we ask them their growth rate. So the top 20%, top quintile are high growth. Then you got the mid-range and the bottom quintile, bottom 20% are laggards. No difference. So marketing, a high marketing contribution does not necessarily, is not statistically significantly different between high growth companies and laggards.
Who's your respondent here?
Say again?
Who's your, am I not loud now?
No, you're good.
Perfect.
Sorry.
You are absolutely perfect.
All right. I'm sorry. But who is your, who's your respondent on this question?
AE leadership. So that's an excellent point. It's what AE leadership says.
Not marketing. Okay. That's interesting. Yes. Okay. Because you know how that would be. If it was a marketing person, they're going to be like, I did 130% because they're not good at math. I contributed 130% of the revenues.
And if you ask, if you ask a sales rep, there's only two reasons for wins and losses. One is superior salesmanship and two is price. Like I lost because of price and I won it because I'm amazing. Like that's my win-loss analysis.
Well, would it be price or bad lead by marketing?
Oh, that's another one. That's true. There's two bad leads. Yeah.
Never them.
All right. So the other component to what makes up an AE's pipeline generally is sales development support. Are they supported by SDRs, you know, XDRs, whatever you call them nowadays? Mm-hmm. So this is actually a lot. Like it didn't used to be the case that 8 out of 10 AE groups were supported by SDRs. There was a time we were all alive. I mean, it may seem like ancient history to somebody who graduated in the last 5 years, but SDR support wasn't always a thing. And now 8 out of 10 groups, you're gonna if you're an AE, you're going to be supported by SDRs.
I 100% agree with that. Like 10 years ago, people just started saying, maybe we should have some people set appointments before they are allowed to run appointments.
Yeah.
And we didn't really classify them as SDRs. I think the biggest problem we have now is where do SDRs live? In marketing or in the revenue organ? What are you seeing from that component? Does it help SDR support percentages based on if they're in marketing or in revenue, or does it matter?
So we have seen pretty consistently that it's like, let's say 75-25 sales, 75% report to the sales organization. When it flips is if it's an inbound SDR group, it's generally something marketing stood up. And it's a problem that you understand. Marketing's generating all these leads, sales saying they're not good, right. They suck. And marketing is saying, fine, we'll build our own appointments then. So they just grow the organization themselves, build their own appointment setting organization. And that works generally pretty well. Like if you have a marketing leader who likes these reps, who wants to deal with early career sales reps, they will make it work. If you have a marketing leader who doesn't want to deal with them day to day, no care feeding, like it doesn't matter where they report. If their leader, like if the functional leader, the skip leader doesn't like them, it's not going to be successful. So you put them wherever, you put them where you can do care and feeding.
And just to
care and feeding.
I feel like that's a huge component there. You said 75% live in the rev org, 25% live in marketing. Mm-hmm. And it could work out pretty well if that marketing person is focused on it. But I really believe that that's where revenue operations really comes into play, as opposed to sales operations. Revenue operators are supposed to break down the silos. And so regardless of where the SDR lives, even though I believe it lives in the rev org, the rev ops person should be focused on the buyer journey and the customer journey, and they should be helping break down these silos and looking at this data.
Absolutely.
So I think that's fascinating what you just said.
And a lot of the challenges, you wouldn't believe how hard it is in big orgs to have CRM, Salesforce, what have it, be small changes that will be huge productivity boons for SDRs, like how hard it is to get that through the cycle. It's because it's like they're just SDRs. Are they really, is this that critical? But if they do something 50 times a day, saving a few clicks is like meaningful to their lives.
I know a tool that helps with that.
Oh, good to know. All right. So we have marketing contribution to pipeline. Coincidentally, it's roughly about a third to sales development contribution to pipeline, right? Mm-hmm. So so that leaves a third for other stuff. And again, similarly or inversely, as ACVs rise, sales development support rises, which makes sense. It's you don't see a lot of 100K sellers out there spending half their week setting their own appointments.
Totally logical.
Yeah,
totally logical.
Makes perfect sense. So one thing we actually did notice difference between high growth and laggards is in the nature, both the proliferation of SDR groups and the nature. So you can see the light blue here is no SDR support. So it's not every high growth company has SDRs, because there are high growth companies that sell 5K ACV. They might not have SDRs. Mm-hmm. But the laggards are twice as likely to not have SDRs. And those that do have SDRs have an outbound component. This chart actually I'm going to clean up later, because outbound might mean outbound and inbound, whereas inbound only. So inbound only is a small slice. Like if you're a company and you only have an inbound SDR group, there's something else in your motion that allows that to happen. You can't just wake up and say, we're going to have inbound only SDRs. Mm-hmm. Like I can't make that happen. You have to do something to get those leads to somebody.
Yeah. And so is the action item on this one, if you want to increase your growth, add some form of SDR, or does this happen to be just, you know, correlated but not causated?
I mean, it's most certainly the latter from a stats perspective. Mm-hmm. But from a first principles logic perspective, if you want to grow faster, going and finding people versus waiting for them to come to you seems like it makes sense.
Yeah. What's that famous quote from Trish? If, you know, inbound marketing is you get what you get. Yes. But outbound prospecting is you get what you want.
Right.
Which I think I tattooed that onto my arm long ago. That's right. That's
true. Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah.
But there's an important caveat to this, you know, Matt, and I think that people think that SDRs are panacea, and it's just, let's go hire some kids out of college and put them on the phone and see what we get. And that's not appropriate for certain motions, especially as you've shown in the data. If you have a $5,000 ACV, SDRs might not be the right thing to do. And number two, you use the right, I love the phrase you use, care and feeding. If you don't have a sales or a marketing leader that is into care and feeding, your SDR team is going to fail. So SDRs are not panacea for every scenario, but boy, if you're high growth and you fit it, have a decent ACV, you'd better have SDRs as opposed to paying what some of the comp data we'll see later.
Yeah.
$170,000, $200,000 for appointment setters.
I think to add to Kevin's point, boards are always asking do more with less. That's why SDRs are there, because you can do more with less.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of comp and the compensation stuff, have people cut their teeth as an SDR, because it'll be cheaper for you to acquire.
Never mistake activity for accomplishment, my friends.
That's also true. I think that's the point. Like it's become, so now that 80% of companies have these, or 80% of AE groups are supported by them, we forgot like what's the reason behind SDRs. And it's, the reason is, if I have 10 AEs and they can close 8 million on their own, prospecting on their own, or if I have 10 AEs and they can close 12 million and it costs me only marginally more, the latter is better. Mm-hmm. It's about levering up the productivity per AE head.
That's right. There has to be a return on that investment. I thoroughly agree there.
So which leads us to the next one. Although it may be surprising to Reddit users, like r/sales on Reddit, AEs actually do have to do their own prospecting. Like a lot of SDRs, at least on the subreddits, don't know that or don't believe it. And then once they make that promotion, they are shocked to learn that you have a territory and you don't get 100% of your pipeline sourced by other people. So this darkish green is AE self-sourced. And these are ACVs. You can see it's relatively consistent.
Yeah.
High 20s, low 30s. You have a bag and it's your job to fill it with pipeline.
Yeah.
Who's shocked it's that low?
Yeah. So again, these are AE leaders in a time where a lot of money is spent in marketing and sales development. So
yeah,
it's still notable. And the darker shade here is channel or other. I can't imagine what other is, but people pick other. Bluebirds.
Referrals.
Referrals, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Although so every AE would say I self-source that. My charisma. Charisma.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Punks. Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah, actually, AE leadership is reporting this. I'm shocked they reported only, 26 to 31%. I would think they would say, I did all of this and the SDRs did none of it.
So the trick is you don't ask people explicitly. You ask the numbers and then you do the math yourself. I think that's
how the survey. Yeah. It's a survey trick.
Yeah.
Because if you asked me directly and I was an AE, I'd probably be like, the SDRs did nothing, nor did marketing.
Yep.
I did it all on my own.
Well, this next one, Matt, is great. I get this one all the time. And if we're going to talk about specialization on SDRs, well, then let's talk about the backside. So what do you got here?
All right. So the backside is the triply specialized. We have the opportunity creator, the opportunity closer, and then who does expansion? Who does renewal expansion? Who goes forth from the first signature? So I think it's maybe easier to look at it this way.
Yeah.
So who owns expansion and who owns renewal? And these all add up to 100%. Don't check my math. I'll check it later. But dark green means that's where the big pairings are. So a deal is closed. Those are called AEs. When do they, if the AE owns renewal and expansion, that's a minority, 14%. More common is that the an AM owns renewal and an AM owns expansion. So you, by pure logic, an AM is somebody who owns renewal and expansion. Mm-hmm. Or you can call them CSMs. So that's sexier. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's functionally they have the same job, but they're more about success, which is great. Who doesn't want
to
succeed?
I don't know if they do, because AMs to me are renewal reps, and that means they're purely there to sell, while the CSMs might not have a quota at all and might be there to handle questions and make sure users are using the product correctly. But you don't want, sometimes in certain life cycles, you don't want the CSMs to have a quota because you don't want that to be a sales function for the client.
100%. I mean, you can see that like the CSM owning renewal and expansion is a vast minority. So it's 80% don't do that. I agree. I don't know why. I'm not afraid of sales. I don't think it's bad, but I know there's a belief that you don't want the success people and the sales people being the same. I'm not sure where that comes from, but it's definitely a thing.
I think it's just a fear that it comes off wrong.
Look at
you. You lose the it should. At the same time, everyone should be selling. You're as a team, sales is a team sport. So I don't care if you don't comp someone on it, everyone's selling no matter what.
100%.
But
these
I think
robots people want to be in sales but don't want any of the risk.
I love this slide though, Matt. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And then this is pure logic, right? Like when you pay for renewals, you probably pay less. I mean, that's not unreasonable. When you pay for expansion, sometimes you pay the same. That's essentially what this says here. It's actually not there, but trust me, it's later on. So the most expensive dollar from a cost to acquire is always the first dollar. Mm-hmm. And you pay, if it's hard and difficult, you have to pay a lot to get more of it. That's the nature of commerce. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's renewal and expansion. So these are like triple teams or triply specialized. So who triply specializes? A lot of companies. Mm-hmm. And at a lot of ACVs, right? Like we were just talking about how not everybody below 5K has an SDR group, but still 55% of that cohort will triply specialize. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is it table stakes? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, specialization is key, Matt. Like, look, there isn't a, Pete was a football player, right? And so, Pete was on one side of the line. They didn't put him on both sides of the lines because he had to get good on the one side that he was good at, and
play both ways. Keep going.
Oh, jeez.
You played Iron Man? Yeah.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yes. But the specialization is key. I mean, you don't have somebody building a Ford truck these days who does everything along the assembly line. There's specialization and you get better at it and more efficient when you get good at that one move or two moves.
tech stack. This is everybody's favorite. Like, everybody likes to start not with their model or motion, but with their technology. It's more fun. It's more cool, definitely. But everyone is using more tools than they used to. That's like for sure. So I think we started like, so we CRM's is base. You can't not. So that's you get zero for that. I think it used to be CSM or CRM plus data. So you had, that was two tools. Mm-hmm. And then it became three. The 2020 report was four was the median. And now the median's five. So half of companies use five or more tools. So I can do math here. Yeah, 36% of companies use six or more tools plus CRM.
That's crazy.
It's a lot.
All that drunken tool fatigue.
Yeah.
But it's a lot, though.
The drunken tool confetti, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
And then, so this is, I mean, I'm a huge Jeffrey Moore like fan. I think his work's pretty good. And like Crossing the Chasm was a big deal. Fun fact, Trish, who's founder of the Bridge Group, the bridge was meant to mean like bridging the chasm. So that's where the actual name comes from. Jeopardy question.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So these are tools that people use laid over the adoption lifecycle curve. So innovators, early adopters, the chasm, early, late majority, and laggards. So you can see like the easy one is like paying LinkedIn money is definitely in the late majority stage. A lot of people pay LinkedIn money, whether it's Premium or Sales Navigator or what have you.
But not if they're early on.
No. Not if exactly. It gets expensive quickly. So yeah, if you're young, and I think with this data, I exclude any companies under 5 million in revenue just because there's budget constraints. So it's unfair to include them. Mm-hmm. But one that absolutely blew up over the last few years is calendar scheduling for AEs. Yeah. I mean, it moved from like here to here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so similarly for sales engagement, it was always, not always, it was big with SDRs, but it used to be a little more piecemeal. Like it was like email tracking was first for AEs. Like, did they open my email? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then it was calendar. And now it's like, well, maybe if I had a reminder to send them another email or do another call, and that's sales engagement. I was gonna say the new stuff, I was trying to figure out like what has yet to cross the chasm. So this is the stuff I think is most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced CRM updating. Like, do you know the tools like Duly,
people.ai
is an amazing example. Yeah.
That's where I work.
I didn't know that actually. I hadn't put
not
it together.
Not for long with that attitude.
But yeah,
like, I was raising my hand going, all right, come on, let's get out there.
noted analytics. If I throw a Boston company out there, but yeah, like that kind of stuff is not widely adopted, but it makes perfect sense. And same with advanced sales forecasting, meaning more than you get out of your base, not base CRM, but your CRM of choice.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I know this space inside and out, but if you're writing back, you know, like to me, I always look at it this way. If you're writing back to Salesforce activity that your reps are doing, one, you're freeing up 10 to 15% of their day because you're writing back their activity to the opportunity and account level. So you're saving them money, then all the data and all the tools that happen upstream from this work better.
Yeah.
Because the underlying data needs to be fixed for the tools to work in a lot of cases. And People AI, I'm not going to say any other names, but People AI is going to fix your underlying data problem, which will then make all your tools work better for you without you lifting a finger.
We're watching it. Hopefully you'll cross a chasm. All those options will turn. You won't even talk to him anymore. You'll be so wealthy. You'll be off in an island someplace.
Yeah, exactly. I'll buy an island for the Sassholes.
All right.
Here we go.
Here's something I really want to talk about. The COVID stuff. I'm like y'all. I'm over COVID. Let's get back in person. But companies haven't decided yet. That's the thing. At least as of November, December, January, when we really like October, November, December, January, when we're really getting the most results. Companies hadn't decided we're hiring remote now. Sometimes we're hiring like close to the office, like locally remote. And then there's some degree of, I don't know, man, we're remote now, but the future's unknowable. So I think that's pretty, I mean, you can see there's pretty good consistency across all revenue bands of companies not knowing where their next AE hire is going to be.
I find this to be shocking, personally. I would think everyone would be blended. I think COVID has given us an excuse to go find labor across the country as opposed to in your area.
Yep.
And therefore, we have a labor shortage. So companies should say, I'm going to find the best talent at the best price, no matter where they're located.
I agree. I think the challenge is
the company culture.
The company culture. Or like the reach out and strangle somebody. Like you want to literally be able to do that with your reps.
Which I think is why in person, like RKOs and quarterly in person. If you're going to do that blended approach, you got to have in the budget company-wide meetings every quarter or every 6 months so that you can all get together and be like, oh my God. Like I'll tell you this, posting all this stuff on LinkedIn, all these people, you know, you see all these remote kickoffs mm-hmm. and then you see the posts about People AI's in-person kickoff. And I'm like, it's getting so much more fanfare because people are just like, you did this in person? Yeah. You know, how great, as opposed to somebody showing a picture of how they did their kickoff with their dog in their lap.
Yeah. It's like, was it like Celebrity Squares? Like, that's what all those Zooms look like to me now.
Yeah. They do. Brady Bunch, right?
That's crazy. Yeah. So this, who knows what the future holds, but
yeah,
we're still not there yet. People aren't, they haven't picked a side of the fence yet.
That's right. And I think that, you know, the tagline out of this becomes, it's not true when somebody says, everybody's gone remote. It's not true. There's 25 to 50% of companies respondents in this survey that are still local to the, you know, to the office. And I know for a fact, there are some candidates that are like, especially the younger ones, I want to be in the office. I want to build out my network and get to know people in the office, which, you know, is a little bit surprising to me because I'm the old guy who's like, I don't want to commute anymore. But yeah, that's right. So it's not true to say that everybody has gone remote. It's just, it's not true. There's some that are blended and some that are fully remote.
Yep.
So
we'll see what the summer holds.
Although I did that wrong, didn't I? It was like blended is like a lot. There's what five, I'm saying 5 to 10% are local only. So it's not everybody, but it's declining. But do I read this chart right?
Right. I mean, so blended is the biggest, but is that a choice or is that a, what else are we going to do?
Yeah.
Right. Like local to offices is a choice. You can say never COVID, never met them. You're coming in.
That's right.
But blended is kind of the default, I would think.
Yeah. There you go. Right.
So here's the one on the SDR side. On the SDR side, we have seen declining seniority. So SDRs used to be early sales career, but not early career. Mm-hmm. When I say, I mean, this is over a decade ago. It would be someone, not with as many gray hairs as me, but closer. Hmm. And over time, SDR experience prior to hire declined. This is the first year we've really seen it on the AE side.
Hmm.
It is down 42%. Or this is actually different. It's down. It doesn't seem significant, but average experience is down 2.7 years from 3 years. Doesn't seem like a ton, but that's a lot of sales numbers. It's a lot of
that's a quarter,
deal
right?
cycles. Yeah, right. It's the number of at-bats on average you're down. So when you look at this by ACV, kind of everyone has shifted their distribution of required experience to the left, right? So it's everyone is over here, you know. Before the black bars were a little wider, the darker bars were a little wider. Now the light bars are a lot wider. Yeah. So why is this happening? Well, number one, there is it's not as popular on LinkedIn, but there is a great resignation that's actually a great retirement. People 55 and over are just peacing out.
Mm-hmm.
Their labor force participation is down. Mm-hmm. So which frees up senior enterprise AE roles. So everybody's moving up, which leaves early career people are the only people left. SDRs or maybe not even SDRs. Maybe somebody who was working, I think a great example is like working the kiosk at the mall.
That's right.
They can become a junior AE with not a ton of care and feeding.
Mm-hmm.
They're already not afraid of getting yelled at. So let's get them on the phones. They'll do great.
Uh-huh. That's right.
So everybody is moving up, which means average experience is going down. Now the flip side of that, which is logical, is you say, well, I'm sure we can get the same productivity with more junior reps. No, of course you can't. Your inputs are different. Your outputs are going to be different. So ramp time's a little longer. Not a big deal. 10 years a lot shorter because people are flipping jobs.
Can you go
jobs.
Back to the ramp time?
Sure. So ramp right now is 5.3 months.
Okay.
5.3 months. which is not terrible. It's actually pretty good when you think about it. But that's average. The issue is the tenure. So 5.3 months is good. We're getting better. We're more efficient. We're bringing in younger hires. We're very much more efficient at getting them to quota or getting them off ramp. One is a decision and one is a fact. So let's say we're getting them off ramp. That's a decision we make. But their tenure is way down. And the reason tenure is down is because people are leaving. People are taking the step up because that's where the money is. That's what they want to do. There's a lot more opportunities now. People are poaching quite viciously. Like this is, I thought 2018, 2019 was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
This is crazier. People are really, really poaching. People are jumping jobs for great opportunities at a pretty high rate. Mm-hmm. So if ramp time is better, which is good, and average experience is down and tenure's down, productivity is shorter.
Yeah.
So we are down from 26 months at full productivity. So when you get off ramp to when you get promoted to somebody else's team or go to a different company, it used to be 26 mm-hmm. months. Now it's 22. Like you said, that's a quarter. So you're buying mm-hmm. that rep and you're getting a quarter less out of them.
Yeah. You know,
it's like productivity inflation. It doesn't get you, the buck doesn't get you what it used to.
You know, what's fascinating is all that stuff you said, how people are the great resignation. I almost think it's not as much the great resignation as it is. Everyone's on a Zoom call. Everyone has a mentality of there's no culture. There's yeah. no way I'm connecting. The switching costs, like you do with SaaS products, switching costs are usually difficult. The switching costs are a lot less because yeah. I'm Zooming with my one company. Tomorrow I can be Zooming with a different company.
100%.
I don't have a lot of engagement.
I mean, that's it. And another piece, like the actual cost of interviewing has gone down a lot. Like yeah. if you were in an office, you had to have a doctor's appointment. Yeah. You had like, wow, you had a lot of doctor's appointments in the last 2 weeks.
Are you okay?
Yeah, you know, that's not a thing anymore.
Now you can just say COVID and you're out for 5 days. And
yeah. So truly this, like the switching costs are low and people are being pinged constantly. The flip side of the people leaving is that obviously the annual attrition numbers are up, and it is up in one direction. It is up in the voluntary direction. So this is 2020 is the lighter color. 2022 is the darker color. Involuntary, meaning involuntary by the rep. We said, this is not a good fit. We're letting you go. Voluntary saying, this is not a good fit. I'm leaving. And this excludes internal promotions because like that's not really either. And it just muddies the numbers.
Yeah.
So total attrition is up.
The way I interpret this is we're holding on to people that we probably would have let go before because of the environment. And people that are great are leaving quicker and we can't backfill them. So we're holding on to people.
I mean, if 32% basically is it's a third of your team. It means if I took a 3-year sabbatical and I came back, I wouldn't recognize a single person on the team. Probably.
Yeah, how do you grow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's reasonable. Some teams are 100%. I mean, that's just the nature of their pay, their culture, or their model doesn't matter. That works for them. They can do 100% turnover.
In the SaaS world, if you have a complicated product to sell and it's hard to sell, you're going to have a hard time retaining people when you're up against an easier product to sell. Sometimes you're just going to lose based on the products you're selling.
Stuff, right? Like, do you know the old, they call the 3 T's of like sales success as like talent, timing, territory. And now it's like team, right? Like that's how you're successful. Everything is talent, but obviously timing is big. You know, like I think it's easier to make your number Q1 2022 than Q2 2020, probably, right? Like the world hasn't frozen. And then your territory is also your product, really. Right? Like you're selling X into Y. And then your team. Do you have SDR support? Do you have to do 80% of your pipeline yourself or do you have to do 20%? This is where I get in trouble. There's a lot going on that says 50% of reps aren't hitting their number. That may be true, but it's missing over what time period? Over this month, it's more than 50%. Over this quarter, maybe. Over a year, maybe, maybe not.
Doesn't it also impact if you're a pure hunter versus a blend?
100% right. Yes. Like a rep is not a rep is not a rep. But I think two-thirds, my data, what I've seen, and I've mapped out the distributions, is two-thirds of reps will hit their number in a given group, right? In an average group. That's to me, not a bad number. I don't think that the rep who hit 98% of their number on the year is a POS, and the rep who hit 102% is a god. Like, they're not mm-hmm. They're the same rep. It's rounding. Mm-hmm. It's one deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get so hung up on if a 98% miss is that different than a 102% hit. Like, it's just the nature of math.
Yeah.
Well, you also take a third of that, and then you take half of those people and you put on plan. The other half you try to coach.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? That's sort of the math, right?
Right. Yes. Not everybody's a fit for every role. Mm-hmm. And not everybody who just misses is materially different than somebody who just hit.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think quota attainment is staying the same. I know people are saying 50% of reps are missing the number. I think they are. I just think the time period is not a meaningful one, right? It's like the scoreboard, the clock is still running. Don't call it out yet. Game's not over. So comp is up. I knew his comp was going to be up, right?
Sure.
I was like, of course, how's it not going to be up? And I was like, it'll be up a little bit, 2, 3%, maybe 4%. No, it's up real big. OTEs are up 5%. Mm-hmm. Compounded for over a decade. This isn't in 1 year. This is compounded over a decade. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the median OTE in our 2007 report, I looked at it, was under 100. It was 99K. Then it was 105, 105 in 22. It's 167 today.
Crazy.
But distributionally, it's like six-figure OTEs ain't what they used to be.
Exactly. It's sort of like table stakes.
To make 96% of our respondents, OTE was crazy. Over 100K. And they're almost 30% are over 200K.
Yeah. And bringing back some of the other slides, 2.7 years of experience.
Yep.
And it's like, 2.7 years of experience, and boom, you should be making over 100K, period, end of story.
Which is why I don't believe anybody who says sales isn't the best profession in the game. I mean,
there you go.
Right?
There you go.
I appreciate the choir here. You guys made great decisions by going into revenue. Good job, everybody.
Oh, my
seriously.
Goodness.
Yeah, it's something. This is great. It's truly something.
You know, I say this when you're in the Rev Org, it's not a wallet, it's an ATM. Because when things are going bad, they're not going to divest from the Rev Org unless that company, if they are, you better run from that company. Yeah. They're going to invest when things are bad, maybe a little bit more strategic and maybe pull back on some things, but they're going to invest in the Rev Org. And when things are going well, the Rev Org is given a blank check and said, just don't mess it up.
Right. Yeah.
But look at that. I mean, basically 100%. If you're not paying your AEs over 100K, you're just not competitive. There's your action item. Take that. Smoke it. Pipe it.
Right.
I don't care what anyone says. Sales is the toughest job in the entire business. You're on the front lines battling.
Yes. And I think the first line sales leader just got even tougher because now you're dealing with higher attrition, shorter, younger reps. They had less at-bats, less managers, shorter time of productivity.
Yeah.
Comp is way up.
Yeah.
And quotas are, let me say it this way. Inflation adjusted quotas are down from last year. Yeah. That's something where the CFO visits the sales leader more than they'd like.
Uh-huh.
And I would say,
can you go over how many sales leaders do you need the oversight?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's
and while we're getting to that, I think one thing really to point out there is enablement is great, but enablement really is driven by the frontline sales leader. Right. And a lot of people forget that. You need to enable the frontline sales leader to continue your message after you have those onboarding classes.
Absolutely. Right. It's like,
I think frontline leaders are probably the most important job in a sales org, not Pete, frontline leaders.
Yeah, fair enough. So a distribution of it's roughly one first line leader to seven AEs. And I say leader because depending on your organization, if you're small, your sales manager might be a VP of sales or a CRO, who knows? Titles also have received inflation over the recent years. But it's generally somewhere between 5 and 7 reps per first line leader. And that's a full-time job. And that's a bigger full-time job when you're also a 40, 50, 60% recruiter, like a lot of rep managers are today. Now, after I was just singing a sad song for first line leadership, I should note they get are getting paid bank. AE comp was up 5%, compound annual growth over 10 years. They're up 5.5%.
Yeah. It's
pretty good. I mean, that's better than a 60-40 portfolio will get you. It's all right. Yeah. It is a challenging but lucrative career. But like, Kevin, you and I had talked like years ago, like, is a manager, should a manager get arsed if their number one rep out earns them? Your number one rep? Who cares?
Yeah.
They're paying you. If they earn more than you, great. That means you earned more.
Yeah.
If they earn less than you, you earn less. That's how it works.
Look, the way I always say that is you're a manager and you have reps that work for you that make more than you, then strap on a quota and get back on the phones, baby. Yeah. Because you're a manager for all the wrong reasons. If you have a problem with that, them out earning you. And at one of my previous companies, we designed it in that way that a rep could, and the manager had to be fine with that, which made it very, very clear. If you were a rep and you wanted to be a manager, and if you had an issue with reps making more than you as a manager, then don't be a manager.
Yeah.
And the logic was, but look at the income. Look at the compensation for these people though. This is great. I mean, this is great stuff, but I hear what you're saying though, because if quotas haven't gone up a lot, mm-hmm. we better figure out ways that gross margins can be expanded. If quotas aren't going up but comp it for the leaders and the frontline reps are going up, where's our gross margins coming from?
All right. So daily activities, much less interest in this than on the SDR side, but still it's important to directionally know for the huge dollar sums I'm paying and the reasonable quota attainment they're delivering, are my reps putting in sufficient effort? Mm-hmm. So we a lot of people don't micromanage this, but you just want to know like how many activities, how many attempts, how many touches is an AE doing a day? Mm-hmm. And 64 is the median. And it is not super phone heavy, which is not all that surprising. If I would guess the majority of those phone are in outbound prospecting, trying to source my own. Mm-hmm. And the majority of email and LinkedIn are marketing or outbound SDR stuff, just following up, connecting, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But 60 activities a day might seem onerous to an AE, but if you ask an SDR if they could handle 18 dials a day, they would say before 8. Yes, I could do it before 8.
Matt, so you got a 3-minute tip for us, for our listeners.
I do. All right, let me ask you a question. All right. It's about some of the advice I see for testing. Everybody's about testing, like, you know, everybody's puffing up their chests.
Yeah.
Let's give me a conversion rate on anything, an email, prospecting, somebody picks up the phone. Give me a number.
All right. Raw lead to closed one sale conversion rate. And you want me to give you the number?
Yeah.
5.5%.
5.5. So let's say 6%. What's a reasonable improvement? Doubling, tripling, 20% improvement?
Ooh, boy. Yeah. 20%.
That's what I think. 30. If to detect a 30% improvement off an initial baseline conversion rate of 6%, you need over 4,000 samples, 2,300 per arm.
Oh, shit.
So anybody you see on LinkedIn saying, throw those in a list and A-B test it, does not know what they're talking about.
Because you can't get the statistical significance.
You don't have the power. A human being is not doing 4,000 two-armed tests. It ain't happening.
Matt, this is a draft. Thank you for sharing typos and all. I mean, the data is awesome. When are you guys publishing this?
So we are shooting for at the end of the month. So let's say by the 1st of March.
Okay. So this is seen here first.
100%. I think no one who doesn't have a Bridge Group email address has seen this yet, except for y'all. So you're the first.
You're bad.
Thank you for sharing this report. It hogged up all the time. You have a book that's out there. Could you clue us in quickly on the book?
Sure. So it is not for your listeners. It is for Salesforce nerds. And it is, I wrote it in 2016, I think, published in 2017. It was about so I don't know if you all remember when Salesforce debuted Lightning, the Lightning experience, like the new framework. It was about now is a good time to rethink about how you build sales development processes in Salesforce, because you have to change everything with Lightning anyway. So now is a good time to go ground up, rethink your Salesforce motion for sales development teams. So that's what my book was about.
Got it.
And what's the name of the book? Please show it again.
It is Lightning Sales Ops. When did I write this? Who knows? Copyright 2017. So I actually wrote it in 2016 and 17, which makes me feel quite old. Wow.
Don't worry, you're amongst friends.
That's all right.
Hey, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show.
That was amazing. Thank you all, guys.
Hey, what's the best way for listeners to learn more about you or connect with you?
Sure. Hit me up on LinkedIn. There are two Mappertuzzis. Strangely enough, they're both in Massachusetts. I am the one that looks like me and who has like sales and sales development stuff in their bio.
All right. We'll have all the links in the podcast notes. Hey, thanks for listening to the SaaS Holes. On behalf of Jamie, KG, and myself, Pete, we thank you for listening. And we ask that you give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to our newsletter and the podcast notes. And you can always buy us a beer on Patreon/SaaS Holes. Thanks so much for joining us. Cue the music.